The hour of 8:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order State and Local Government Operations Reform Technology. And the first bill on the agenda is House File 2899 that we laid over from the last meeting. Representative Poppy?
Representative Pulowski, welcome to your committee, and would you like to state your name for the record?
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we put on the DE1 amendment, and then we took testimony, we laid the bill over. I realize there is not a quorum at this time, but I'm going to renew my motion that 2899, as amended, be passed and be re-referred to civil justice. Now, since that motion is before us, we do have one clarifying amendment that has come up over the 4 days. And that's the A4. So I'd like to move that amendment, even though we can't take action on it, Madam Chair. And I'd like to have Sandy Guerin come up and explain why this amendment is needed.
Hello, Ms. Guerin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Sandy Guerin on behalf of the Minnesota Newspaper Association. The A4 amendment that you see before you is purely technical from all the way through line 1.11, and these are changes that were suggested to us by the Office of Administrative Hearings and a few other people to clean up some of the last-minute amendments that we put on the delete everything last week. Those are purely technical. What is not technical is the last amendment, page 6 after line 12, insert. And this was a suggestion made to us by one of the stakeholders. And here's what this does. Currently, the bill provides that the Office of Administrative Hearings will issue orders. If for some reason the governmental body refuses to abide by the decision of the Office of Administrative Hearings, this would require the person to go to district court to enforce that order, and this would pay all of their costs and attorney's fees for having to do that. We don't expect this to happen very often. As I mentioned earlier, this bill was modeled after the election complaint law that was passed in 2004. The Office of Administrative Hearings has told me that they've never had a problem with anyone complying with their orders under that law. We would expect they would comply also in this situation, especially because we are giving them immunity from liability if they do follow the order. So I don't think this will happen very often, but we thought it would be a good idea to add this provision in case.
Thank you, Ms. Guerin. Representative Pulowski, there's now a quorum, so if you would like to...
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A4 amendment.
All right. It's been moved to the A4 amendment. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. With that, the bill is in order, and I believe there is at least one person that wishes to testify today, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Does that person please? And Representative Kiffmeyer has a question. Did you want to ask the question now, or you want to wait? Okay. Welcome to the committee. If you would state your name for the record, please.
I certainly will, Madam Chair. My name is Don Gemberling. That's G-E-M-B-E-R-L-I-N-G. So one of the things my children learned from an early age is you always have to spell our last name. So I'm here today because I'm representing an organization called the Minnesota Coalition on Government Information. I'm a member of the board of directors of the coalition. The coalition is composed of citizens, attorneys, librarians. What we all have in common is we all care about issues of government information. So I'm on the board, I think, because I spent 35 years working on these issues in state government. Okay? As part of that work, I did a lot of training of government officials. I did a lot of activities where I helped citizens understand what their rights were under data practices laws. I helped the media gain access to lots of data. It was an interesting job. So, first, COGI, the coalition, would like to thank Representative Pulowski. This is one of a continuing series of efforts over the last 20 years to find better ways to enforce the Data Practices Act. And you've heard testimony to that effect earlier, okay? One of the things that I came to understand when I did my work is this is almost kind of one of those classic situations where in almost all instances you have the government versus citizens in a dispute. And not surprisingly, and Rich Neumeister has talked about this a little bit, when citizens enter a dispute with the government, there's this relationship for a number of reasons, okay? The playing field is not balanced because government has, in the case of most citizens, greater resources to fight over disputes. So what this bill is trying to do is balance things a little better, okay? And I've seen that attempt before, and I hope this one works because this is a pretty creative approach to that resolution. Now, a couple, three things we're concerned about in the bill. Along the way, the bill got an amendment, and that amendment, which appears on lines 3-4 and 3-5, exempts disputes about educational data from coverage of the new remedy. One of the things I dealt with a lot in my job was disputes about educational data. Not surprisingly, parents are often concerned about educational data, what's happening with it, whether or not they can get access to it, and that sort of thing. And this amendment would take away their right to use this new remedy to resolve those disputes. I'm not quite sure of the reasoning behind that. As I understand it, part of the reasoning is there is a federal law that also regulates educational records. However, Minnesota has adopted almost all provisions of the federal law into the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act by reference. Okay, so we're already complying with federal law in the context of the Data Practices Act. And that was done over a number of years. Okay, and that's done essentially by referring to various rule components of the federal law. Now, one of the interesting things about the federal law, and I think law in general, is a state still has the right to say to its citizens, we're going to give you more rights than the federal government is going to give you. Now, some people think that's a quaint idea, and some of us love that idea. But this kind of falls into that area. So I don't see an argument that can hold up that says that federal law somehow keeps the Minnesota legislature from giving citizens the right to use this process to resolve disputes with school districts and institutions of higher education or other kinds of educational institutions. So I would urge you to remove that provision from the bill and give parents and students the same rights to use this remedy as anybody else. The second issue is, I think, simpler, I hope. Rich Neumeister in testimony mentioned the fact that that when you bring a complaint under this bill, it has to be a complaint that involves a violation of the Data Practices Act. Okay, what that leaves is a potential ambiguity. In 1980, based on authority from the legislature, the Department of Administration, for which I used to work, promulgated rules to implement and enforce the Data Practices Act. And I, off the top of my head, I can't tell how big they are, but they're like 25 pages of rules. They're not huge. However, they do explain some things, and they do expand on what the statute says, and I think it would be good policy if you incorporated the rules into things that people could use this new remedy for. And the rule the kind of jurisdictional statement is on page 3.1, and the simple way to accommodate that would just be to add the words, after the words chapter, the words and rules promulgated thereunder. Now, let me give you an example of why that might be helpful to citizens. The rules make it very clear that if the government has some data about me and I want to send it to anybody else, let's say, for example, I'm having a dispute with a government agency and that dispute involves private data, and I want to consent to the release of that private data to the New York Times or the Minneapolis Star Tribune or the Pioneer Press, the rules make it clear that if I sign a consent form, an informed consent form, that I can give that data to anybody. There's nothing like that in the statute. The statute talks about the ability to give informed consent, but the statute itself doesn't make it clear that I can send what some people would view as their personal data to anybody I want to, okay? And I think in this day and age, that's an important right for citizens to be able to enforce. Now, lastly, in the whole area of disputes under the Data Practices Act, as I mentioned earlier, we're talking about whether or not you can find a way to balance things out. And as I looked at the bill, and frankly, based on my experience, in some instances, government agencies and the people who represent them sometimes, I want to emphasize, sometimes, adopt a tactic of basically two things, and that's delay and obstacle. Why the delay tactic is used is all kinds of reasons. With the media, it's used because things after a while don't become so newsworthy. The obstacle tactic, however, is one that's primarily used on citizens. And what do I mean by the obstacle tactic? Legal ease, okay? Motions for discovery, motions to oppose discovery, motions to delay, motions for judgment notwithstanding, all those kinds of things. And to the extent that citizens are not represented by counsel, because representation by counsel is expensive, they really are one down in those situations. Now, this bill does a lot to take away that particular tactic from the government, but there are still a few things you might want to look at, okay? For example, the administrative law judge, for good cause shown, can give the government more than 15 days to respond to a complaint by a citizen. Now, whether or not that's too much time or not enough time, I'm not sure, but you may want to look at it. For good cause shown, the administrative law judge can delay a hearing for up to 10 days. That's probably okay, but again, it's another possibility where somebody might try and draw out the process. One of these, which is on lines 424 and 425, is more problematic. And that says the administrative law judge can continue the hearing that's proposed under this bill for any length of time to allow the parties to submit additional evidence or testimony. You might want to circumscribe that a little bit, 20 days, 30 days, something like that, because potentially any length of time means any length of time. One of the things that the amendment fixed, the amendment you just adopted, is if a citizen wins, under the bill before you amended it, they still had to go to district court, which again could be another obstacle. But in the bill is amended now if you have to go to district court, you get attorney's fees, hopefully. And lastly, throughout the bill, and this is particularly in the sections that deal with the award of attorney's fees and the ability of the administrative law judge to award attorney's fees, there are opportunities for what I can only think of as mischief, okay? Let me give you an example. A government agency can argue that fees ought to be denied to a citizen because its violation of the Data Practices Act was, quote, merely technical, or that there is genuine uncertainty about the law, okay? Now, most parts of the Data Practices Act have been on the books since 1980, okay? I begin to wonder after a while how we can still offer people the opportunity to make those kinds of arguments. But, again, I see them as potential obstacles to citizens to be able to get the attorney's fees because that's a critical component of the bill. Two more that may be problematic, and that's the government has given the opportunity to argue that an action was brought frivolously, okay? And that's kind of standard language in legal stuff, and I don't see a particular problem with that, or that the action was brought for purposes of harassing the government, okay? Now, some of us think that that's part of what the United States is about, as long as you don't get violent, and that's harassing the government, you know? But again, what I see, however, is the opportunity for arguments to be made, almost always involving citizens, that what they're doing is a form of harassment. Now, I worked for the Department of Administration. Frankly, I did deal with situations where citizens were harassing the government. Okay, And frankly, in most of those cases, unfortunately, the people involved had mental health issues, and they were very difficult to deal with. But I think you could find perhaps a better way of handling that issue than just making another possible argument to discourage attorney's fees. Thank you for your attention. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Representative Chair,
members of the committee, I'm going to respond just to one point, and I'm going to start with an observation. You'll note that this bill has gone through several transformations, and Representative Lanning mentioned one of them, the deletion of all of the open meeting law violations as a result of the negotiations with the stakeholders. The testifier just brought forward on 3.4 a sentence that he wishes to have deleted. That sentence was deliberately put in as a result of conversations with the stakeholders, and those stakeholders were the cities, the counties, the school districts, and a number of other entities. So while I can understand his concern, at this point I would prefer that the bill stay as it is. And this bill is going to civil justice, and many of the issues that he has brought forward may be more properly debated in civil justice, but at this point I would prefer that the sentence stay in.
All right. Are there any questions for Mr. Gemmerling? All right. I know Representative Kiffmeyer had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Mr. Gemmerling, I do appreciate your comments, and in the committee last time I did mention the citizen side of it, and I was wondering, I have two questions here. Chairman Pawlowski, when you talk about stakeholders, did that include someone such as Mr. Gemmerling or a entity like that? So easy it is to think of stakeholders as county, city, township, and so on, government entities, but maybe you could address that and clear that up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sandy Nairn's with me, but my general observation to that is yes, it does. And remember, this bill was deliberately laid over for 4 days so individuals would have an opportunity to look at the amendment, and any concerns that arose after the amendment was adopted. Now, the amendment is simply a variation of half of the bill. And remember, half of the bill is no longer before us. So my observation is yes. But Ms. Nairn can also respond.
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I should tell you that when we came up with this concept a couple of months ago, one of the first people who I met with, in fact, the very first person I met with, Mr. Gemmerling, because I was very interested in his opinion based on his years of experience of whether or not we were on the right track in coming up with this idea. So we have tried to talk to as many different people as we possibly can on this, and I do value some of the comments that Don has made. I think ideally we'd like this bill to have a much broader scope than it does. I think it would have been nice to keep the open meeting law in, to keep educational data in. It's a short session, and we want to at least get the ball rolling on this process. We're not positive that it will work for citizens, but we think the Office of Administrative Hearings does a wonderful job with the caseloads they now have. We'd like to start this working on data that's purely, that we think is purely public data. Educational data is not public. And then if it works, we can start adding in the open meeting law. We can relook at the issue of whether or not educational data should also be handled by them. But I'd like to at least get the ball rolling in the short session and make sure the process works and that OAH doesn't see other problems and concerns that need to be addressed before we move too quickly. And in response to Mr. Gamberling's comments about delay tactics and timelines, we've worked really closely with OAH to make sure they think these timelines will work, and we think they're reasonable. If it turns out they're not, and they're being misused, we'll come back next year and try and fix it. Ray Krause, who's the Chief Administrative Law Judge, and Bruce Johnson are here from Office of Administrative Hearings today if you have any further questions for them on some of these comments. We think the bill's a good bill now. I wish it went a little bit further, but I think it's a really good start.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman, and I really appreciate that those comments. I think that helps to kind of clear that up. I know the art of the possible. One of the questions that in this particular area, though, was, and the rules promulgated there under piece on 3.1 that Mr. Gemmerling mentioned seemed like a reasonable piece here that just an additional reference. I know that is helpful to regular citizens to just know that there are rules in regards to that. I'm just wondering if that might be considered. And then I had a question about the very end of the bill after this.
Ms. Nairn, do you want to respond to that?
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I don't think I have a problem with that being added. I guess we were trying to take the present process that's in court and convert it over to OAH, and there's no mention in current law when someone brings an action in court to also have the rules be part of that discussion. I'm not sure how that has worked out when court cases have been brought. I was trying not to change too much of the substantive law, but just set up this new process. So I guess I don't see a huge objection to it, but I'm not sure what all of its ramifications are. I don't know if the OAH has any opinion on that.
Representative Pawlowski, did you have any?
Madam Chair, Mr. Gehring, an amendment such as this at this time, first of all, what does the amendment do, and why do we need to specifically mention something that already exists? Those would be my two observations.
Mr. Gehring, and are you clear that it's the 3.1?
Yes. Madam Chair, so I think the amendment possibly being suggested by Representative Kiffmeyer would be line 3.1 after chapter, insert, or any rules promulgated thereunder. And I think the effect of that amendment would be to bring within the scope of the OAH process any administrative rules that the Department of Administration has issued related to data practices. So to that extent, it would be expanding the different pieces of expanding the number of pieces of law that could be subject to the OAH process. So I mean, it's sort of a policy judgment on the part of the committee whether they would want to do that.
Madam Chair,
Representative Pawlowski,
the amendment is obviously a substantive amendment. People have had 4 days to bring down written amendments and not propose oral amendments. So I would like to have the department come down and explain what this amendment might do. But I would like to remind members of the committee that you've had 4 days to do written amendments and not oral amendments on the fly.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you very much. And Representative Pawlowski, I do understand, I do realize that. And I know that you've worked very hard. And I wasn't necessarily suggesting making an oral amendment at this time. I was bringing it up so that we had an understanding. But I do understand that you have delayed this and gone through all of that, and I appreciate the testimony here. I was not necessarily suggesting an oral amendment here, just a discussion of the issue.
Thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer. If that's the case, then I don't think we need to have the department come down if there's no amendment before us.
Is there any other, are there any other questions?
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pawlowski, I still have a concern on page 6, line 5. We did discuss this last time it was before us, and that is the charging of a $50 fee for the prevailing complainant. The rationale I heard in committee when this was brought up was, one, that's the way it always happened, and two, there are costs to courts. Representative Pawlowski, are there any other rationale for why we would charge this $50 fee to the person who actually prevails?
Representative Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, this is cheaper than going to district court, significantly cheaper. And we would hope that it would make it possible for individuals to also access public information.
Okay. Thank you, Madam.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Pawlowski. Well, Chair Pawlowski, I look at the amendment we put on, the A4 amendment, which says that the prevailing side would receive all costs and attorney's fees, not all costs and attorney's fees less $50. So if we are going to add consistency, Chair Pawlowski, Madam Chair, I'd like to move that on page 6, line 5, strike less $50, comma.
All right. Ms. Nairn.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, the reason that we are permitting the Office of Administrative Hearings to keep $50 is, unlike when someone goes to court and sues another party, that party does all the serving of the adverse parties and other interested parties. They assume that cost of serving them themselves. Here we are mandating that the Office of Administrative Hearings do all the serving of all the parties, including the subject of the data. So they are going to have some out-of-pocket costs in order to proceed under this new process. That is why we've suggested that they be able to keep some of the money to pay their out-of-pocket costs for serving the responsible authorities and the subjects of the data.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Madam Chair, members, Ms. Nearing, I look at the remainder of the sentence, and the office's costs in conducting the matter shall be billed to the respondent, and I see that all costs can be recouped. You do cover that in the remainder of the sentence. Again, I don't understand why we are charging the prevailing side, who obviously had valid reasons, and the administrative judge agreed that they were valid. Right? Now, why we would charge that person, you know, just to get justice?
Ms. Nearing, do you have any further comment, or Representative Pawlowski?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you know the issue that is before us. I'd speak against the amendment.
All right. Any other comments about this amendment? Otherwise, all those in favor of the amendment, which on line 6.5 removes the less $50 reference, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay.
No. Nay.
I believe that the motion does not prevail.
Madam Chair, with that, I'd renew my motion that House File 2899 is amended, be recommended to pass, and be referred to civil justice.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee. Representative Winkler, why don't you make the motion to your bill?
Mr. Chair, I would move that House File 3111 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
Right. And then, Representative Winkler, I believe you have an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have the ill-favored DE1 amendment, which I think is offered for good reason in this case, and I would move the DE1 amendment.
All right. While Representative Winkler moves the DE1 amendment, I want to just go over a couple of things. Over the past year, there has been a lot of work on this particular issue, and you saw on the House floor yesterday references to election bills going to the House floor. There was a statement whether or not there'd be another election bill, and I believe it was Representative Kiffmeyer that asked me that question. We had had a series of meetings on election bills, both here and outside the Capitol. There was a meeting scheduled in my office on Friday. That meeting started at 10 o'clock and went into the afternoon. Representative Kiffmeyer participated in that meeting, as did the Secretary of State's office, local units of government, and my staff. I was there till about 11:30, and the result really is the amendment that you see before us. I think this is a good bipartisan amendment, and it has a great deal, almost a year's worth of work in it. So I want to thank Representative Winkler and Representative Kiffmeyer, in particular the Secretary of State's office and the local units of government and House Research, for putting the amendment together. So Representative Winkler, the motion before us is the DE1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to incorporate two technical changes that Mr. Gehring brought to me this morning.
Okay. Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair, on page 9, line 9, we were just having an issue with some computer engrossing, so there's some stricken language that should be reinstated. The statutory references, line 9.9, should both be reinstated into the bill.
Does everybody have that change? And then, Mr. Gehring, any other changes?
That's it, Mr. Chair.
So with that change...
This is on the amendment, though, correct?
Yes, this is on the DE1 amendment, members. All right. So with that change, Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, then I would move the DE1 amendment.
All those in favor of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, members, as you mentioned, this is a product of a lot of work with a lot of people, and I would very much like to thank Representative Kiffmeyer and Representative Emmer, who participated at the beginning of this process, the representatives from county and city government who administer elections, the Secretary of State's office, and Senators Gerlach, Rest, and Sieben, who participated, Representative Simon, who was part of this process, and our staff. And then finally, it's important to acknowledge the very constructive role that the Humphrey Institute, specifically Professor Larry Jacobs and Rachel Smith, played in getting this amendment and this bill before us in a shape that I think is almost a consent item. And the issue is absentee ballots. The bill essentially addresses two primary issues. One is that in the 2008 elections, there were 300,000 absentee ballots cast in the state of Minnesota. In some jurisdictions, such as Edina, one-third of the total votes cast in the whole election were through absentee ballots. Of the 300,000 cast statewide, 12,000 were rejected, and two of those 12,000 were improperly rejected. Of course, we all know the Coleman-Franken recount issue and the question of how to treat absentee ballots, whether they were properly or improperly rejected. And so this bill takes a number of steps to try to ensure that many fewer absentee ballots are improperly rejected and to ensure that ballots, absentee ballots and applications are treated equally across the state. Obviously, it's not going to be perfect, but I think this moves us a lot further in that direction. Specifically, this bill creates absentee ballot boards at the county or city level to accept or reject absentee ballots as they come in and count them. It also, this is not a huge issue, but I think it's a very helpful addition that Representative Kiffmeyer offered, which is that it requires the Secretary of State's office to report back to the legislature on statistics on the number of ballots that are accepted or rejected and how they're treated statewide so that we have an ongoing handle on how this issue is proceeding. There are, I could go through the bill, I guess, section by section. I'm not really sure that that's essential. But some of the other highlights are that we're moving from a signature match between the application and the return ballot to a number match. We are enabling cities to be the place for the absentee ballot boards to be convened. We are requiring that in the event a ballot is returned and rejected, if it's at least 5 days before the election, that notice and a replacement ballot is sent to the voter so that they have an opportunity to correct it, and they have to be told why it was rejected so that they actually have a meaningful opportunity to correct it. The makeup of the absentee ballot board is a little different than the bill we had last year, which allowed county staff to do the work. And again, through work with Representative Kiffmeyer, we now will have election judges doing that. One change, and I think this is just a difficult trade-off, is that if you successfully cast an absentee ballot, you will not be allowed to appear on election day at the polls to override that. However, you will have an opportunity 4 days before the election to cast a second absentee ballot to replace the first. Counting of absentee ballots won't begin as soon as they're accepted or rejected. Counting will begin on the Friday before Election Day, which will give the ballot boards time to get through their work. And, Mr. Chair, those are basically the highlights. Again, the goal is to treat absentee ballots the same across the state, to reduce the number of improperly rejected ballots, and I think deal with the issue that was most significantly highlighted in the Coleman-Franken recount.
All right. Members, questions? Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a couple comments to echo what Representative Winkler said. I really do want to thank the Humphrey Institute, Rachel Smith, and Larry Jacobs for really getting this process moving. And I think it's a great model for other areas of legislation here at the legislature, where it took some of us away from the Capitol, away from the glare and kind of the partisan pressures, and just talked about the policy. And over the course of many meetings came up with what appears to be a bipartisan and widely acceptable bill. So I really want to thank them for gutting it out and being patient with legislators and for thinking about of the idea in the first place. The second thing I have to mention, though, since we're on the subject of absentee ballots, I think what Representative Winkler said about the Edina situation is really instructive and important for us to think about. One-third of the voters in Edina voted absentee. Now, what that tells me is probably, with all due respect to the good folks of Edina, I don't think a third of Edina voters really voted absentee. I think what happened, and what naturally happened all over the state, I know in St. Louis Park and Hopkins it happened, is a lot of people really used the absentee ballot process to vote early. They knew it was going to be a big surge in turnout, and some people might have told a little white lie or fib and said that they were going to be gone. They really weren't going to be gone. They just didn't want to deal with the lines. The reason I mention that is because I think that's reality. And I don't think we should be making criminals of those people who choose to vote early. So that is a shameless plug for the fact that I think we should revisit, not this year, obviously, but in future years, the idea of early voting. Because people are early voting right now. They just are. I can't believe that a third of the residents of Edina were out of town on Election Day. That's not true. I think a third of the residents of Edina wanted the convenience of early voting, and I think we should revisit that in future years. Otherwise, we're just sort of kidding ourselves. Early voting is going on right now in the guise of absentee voting, and we ought to just call it what it is and not make, you know, outlaws of the people who choose to do that.
For Representative Kiffmeyer, did I see a hand there?
Yes,
all right,
sir.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Very quickly, I guess. I didn't want to rush anybody else's questions. I do want to also say thank you to Representative Winkler, as we have worked together in this process, and the Humphrey Institute and all the others. We also worked on with the Senate side. And matter of fact, some amendments that went in on the Senate side language were then used as a basis for the bill in the House. So I really have appreciated the working relationship, and I do think it can be a model of doing that. I think, though, one of the things that I think is also important here is that there is an election administration bill that has some other additional good pieces to this that have had a similar working relationship and will also be valuable. I think the big thing on the absentee ballots is a recognition that there's always a certain amount of risk unless you cast an absentee ballot in person. But you're right, there may be some of those things in the future, but I think there are a variety of issues bigger than maybe we can bite off at this time. But I think the process that we can do that. But there are always risks when you vote an absentee ballot, and I think the reality of that, as I have heard from people, is that they just weren't quite aware of that. And on Election Day, in the polling place, is the most secure, best way to cast your ballot with the most information. That still remains to be the case, and that absentee ballots, when necessary, are certainly something we want to make available. But I still have some of those concerns about that risk and making sure our voters understand that. The other thing is that when you have wrongly rejected absentee ballots, the same people have processed accepted ballots. We want to be sure that if there are wrongly rejected, there may be also wrongly accepted. We want to be sure, and I believe that with some of this language we have here today, we have addressed both. And the point is accuracy in accepting and rejecting. And also transparency and openness in that process and recording of them and accountability that goes with that. As we saw after the election in the recount, then those spotlights come on. And really it's important in elections to be preemptive and to make sure that it's done right the first time, and that if there is a recount, it only confirms the good job that was done before Election Day and on Election Day and increases the confidence of our voters. So I would ask my members to support this bill at this time, and with the work that's gone on, I want to say thank you to everybody.
Representative Winkler, do you have any testifiers? We're losing some people because of the fiscal forecast that's going on right now, so there's an update going. Do you have anyone that wishes to testify?
Mr. Chair, I think that there are people here who can answer questions, but I'm not aware of anybody who needs to be heard.
Further discussion from members of the committee? Seeing no further discussion, is there anyone that wishes to testify at this time or needs to? Seeing none, then Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I would renew my motion that House File 3111, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register.
All right. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Poppe.
like to move the minutes of Thursday, February 25th.
Discussion to that motion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Meeting is adjourned.